said, well, even if we don't have a conclusion, let's get on with it, right? In other words, everyone's ready for this to end, even if we don't find any answers, we're ready to be done with it. I know I am. This is a thing that I would not have chosen to talk about. I'm on record as saying that. I was doing this as a request, you know. It's a place where angels fear to tread. I've learned a long time ago, you don't walk into a room and start telling women how to dress. It's just not wise. I'll do that. Braided hair, jewelry, and makeup. Well, every old barn needs a little paint every now and then. From what? Was that helpful or not helpful? First Corinthians 11 is where we are. Logan asked me a week or so ago, I think, was it the end of last week, Logan, or was, he said, I wondered if you needed an armed escort out of here. And I had wondered the same thing. I'd left here and said, I really wish I could just crawl under a rock and go somewhere else for the rest of the service. I'll be honest with you guys, I still don't really know exactly 100% what I would advise on this. I'm supposed to send that to Amy. I found a really good clip. I don't even know where my phone is. A really good clip, and I sent it to myself on my text. There it is. I got too many pockets in that thing. And we might show it towards the end of this lesson. If it's easy enough to throw up there, and if we have time. But I'm going to go ahead and send it to Amy. Talk amongst yourselves. I'm sorry? 1 Corinthians 11 is where we're going. What I want to do is just kind of get us back where we were, where we ended last week, which was a rough outline of the argument on the board. Because as I've looked at this thing, even this morning, for example, so the last 2 weeks I've allowed myself, I think I did it one other time before, but basically I wasn't allowing myself to see what anyone else said about it, and I wasn't allowing myself to see kind of what the YouTube authorities said on it, because I wanted to come to my own conclusions from the text. So starting last week, I started, you know, kind of looking a little bit. And I've watched like 3 videos or 4, so I've not been very much on that, to be honest with you. But last week, I did see a great video by R.C. Sproul, and R.C. Sproul was on a panel with Moeller and MacArthur. Probably it looked 10 years old or 15 years old. They've been gone for 15 years, or R.C. Sproul's been gone for 15 years, I think. So it's 15 or 20 years. R.C. Sproul? Oh, that's right. You're right. He was just real sick 15 years ago. Yeah, I don't know how long it was. Probably 10 years old, probably is right. It doesn't matter how old it was. But they were on a panel and asked about this. R.C. Sproul answered. I thought it was a good answer, maybe even a good place to end. So if we get a chance to do that. But I was struck again because I listened to another video this morning by someone who I thought was interesting. I think it was a lady arguing for head coverings, but she was immodestly dressed and wearing a head covering. I thought that was interesting. Immodestly dressed and wearing a head covering. So if you guys are going to use your head coverings as a covering and a glory, don't do it in a tank top or a two-piece bathing suit or something like that. It doesn't make a lot of sense. So that was one thought I had, and then I listened to another video that was obviously going to be against by a very, very authoritative sounding lady, the deep voice. I don't know, nothing against deep voices, but I was just, that also surprised me. But you know, that's genetics. I'm not trying to beat up on her. You know, I couldn't see her face, but she was obviously going to handle the text pretty quickly. And early on, in that, what she was trying to do, as she outlined her argument very quickly for everyone that she was teaching, she used a phrase early on and said, "Now understand that phrase. Your for what the phrase was. But understand that phrase and be sure, because that helps you, more about that later, but that helps you understand what's going on. In other words, what she was trying to do is use a phrase early on in the text to control the whole passage. She wasn't saying, like, this is his argument and where is his argument going, but she was trying to prep her people to use this particular phrase early on in the text as the controlling factor over everything so they would reach the right conclusion, which was no head coverings. I thought that was interesting. And then another teacher that I admire, I'll put it this way, another teacher that I sometimes admire and sometimes think is correct, but I sometimes disagree with and disadmire, gave some interesting good points on it, but also would take a different approach and think that, you know, or he would take a certain approach. So, and when I was listening to that video, it just dawned on me, there's so many different opinions on this, and the reason is because the argument is not super... I think there's a couple of reasons for it. I'm just going to guess, okay? I'm not Jesus. I'm not the Holy Spirit. I'm going to guess part of the reason why we have so many different opinions on this is more than just one reason. One reason is because most of us... This morning I'm saying everything wrong. Absolutely everything I say today has been wrong. Just budget for that. But I think that our culture and what's around us plays a lot more into what we think's right and wrong than we think it does. I think we're probably more sheep than we realize we are, and we follow the leader more than we realize. So if we're in a culture where everyone's doing X, we tend to think X is okay. And if we are in a culture where everyone thinks X is wrong, we tend to think X is wrong. It's kind of a baseline. And I really do think that if we're going to do this properly, we throw all of that sort of thing out the window and just look at what the Holy Spirit says in the Word. And I think it's super hard for us to do. Don't you? Does anyone agree with that? Because the kinds of arguments I hear showing up on the YouTube are just not always handling the text very well. They're just sort of handling it quickly, but really getting a lot of their oomph from just what they want the answer to be. Any comments on that? Any thoughts? I don't want to be like that, but we probably are to some degree. And I don't want to be. Do you want to be that way? Or do you want to just, like, go with the text? Whatever that is.
It's not in the Bible where it says, when in Rome, do as the Romans
do. That's not in the Bible. That's a good comment, John. All right, let's read the text. And hopefully we can outline the argument quickly again and then make some... There was one part of the passage we have not yet discussed before we actually come to try to draw some conclusions and make some application. The part we haven't handled yet is, and because of the angels. And I do want to mention that because I think it does actually help us know whether or not this thing is culturally bound or not. It's not just a throwaway line. But more about that when we get there, right? We're not there yet. Let's pray and ask the Lord's help, and then we will get started. Our Father, we pray that you would forgive us for all the ways that we overlook your word, or that we disobey your word, or that we run to our idols, or that we determine from the outset what can and cannot be possible. And I pray that you would forgive our many sins and just help us to see anew your glories in the Word and in your world, that we might follow you and be lights shining to others. And I pray now that you would come in the power of the Spirit, you'd speak through me, speak through this passage to all of us, help us all to be submissive, more and more submissive to your Word, whatever that is, and to have wisdom as we seek to obey your Word. This is an issue I think that's difficult, And I don't want to bind anyone's conscience where you've left it free. I don't want to leave them free where you've bound them. And I come to the end of this study and really am still a bit perplexed. But perhaps we can come to some certain conclusions and certain applications that you would lay on our hearts. Pray that you would give me the right balance between saying, here's what the text for sure says, and leaving the consciences free where you've left them free. I pray that you give me the right balance there, and that you would take us through, expand our time and take us through this study so we can feel concluded by the end of this Sunday school hour. And we commit ourselves to you, and we ask for your help. In Jesus' name, amen. Let's read. Imitate me. This is 1 Corinthians 11:1. Imitate me just as I also imitate Christ. Now, I praise you, brethren. I'm reading from the New King James, which I've latched onto for this passage. Now, I praise you, brethren, that you remember me in all things and keep the traditions just as I delivered them to you. But I want you to know that the head of every man is Christ, the head of woman is man, and the head of Christ is God. Every man praying or prophesying, having his head covered, dishonors his head. But every woman who prays or prophesies with her head uncovered dishonors her head. For that is one and the same as if her head were shaved. For if a woman is not covered, let her also be shorn. But if it is a shame, but if it is shameful for a woman to be shorn or shaved, let her be covered. For a man indeed ought not to cover his head, since he is the image and glory of God. But the woman is the glory of man. For man is not from woman, but woman from man. Nor was man created for woman, but woman for the man. For this reason, the woman ought to have a symbol of authority on her head, because of the angels. Nevertheless, neither is man independent of woman, nor woman independent of man in the Lord. For as woman came from man, even so man also comes through woman. Very, very good translation. Just gives us what it's there. But all things are from God. Verse 13, judge among yourselves, is it proper for a woman to pray to God with her head uncovered? So this is, I think, his point. So he's his second argument here. Judge among yourselves. Is it proper for a woman to pray to God with her head uncovered? Does not even nature itself teach you that if a man has long hair, it is a dishonor to him? But if a woman has long hair, it is a glory to her. For her hair is given to her for a covering. But if anyone seems to be contentious, we have no such custom. Nor do the churches of God. All right, so real quickly, outline this again. I should have just left it from last week. Verse 2 gives us kind of an opening statement. He praises them for keeping traditions. Praise for keeping or holding to the traditions as he has passed them on. So he has received traditions and pass them on, and the Corinthian church seems to be willing to hold on and keep fast the traditions as he's passed them on that he's also received. So think in your mind of a relay race and how the one runner gets the baton from one person and passes it on to the next person, and that's there are some things in our faith that are like that. And Paul is opening this conversation by praising them for being those who don't drop the baton and who pass it on to the next generation, unchanged. Now, he gives them the principle in verse 3. Headship. That's the principle. Biblical headship. Head of every man is Christ, head of a woman is man, head of Christ is God. Then, an application of that principle in verses 4 to 5. Application of principle. Okay. Every man praying or prophesying with something coming down off of his head dishonors his head. Every woman praying or prophesying with an uncovered head dishonors her head, for it is one and the same as if she, as being shaved. Now he goes into the argument where he expands on that last line in verse 6, argument 1, which I have still kind of think is, I don't kind of think, I didn't get down to the bottom of this and look in logic books. But I think it's a reductio. I don't know how to spell that. I'm not a Latin guy. But the point is, it's argument one that says, okay, so if you're not going to be, if the woman is not going to be covered when she's praying or prophesying, she might as well shave her head, because that's where your argument leads. If you don't think it's important for a woman to be covered while she's praying or prophesying, then you must, you might as well take that logic to its logical conclusions, which is she can shave her head. And you know that's silly. You know that's absurd. Therefore, you ought to cover your head. That's his argument in verse 6. Then an explanation in verses 7 to 10. Explay, expla or play? Have an I? Explanation. I didn't know if there was an I. You don't explain, you explain, but I didn't know if you... I don't know these things. Okay, an explanation. And the explanation has this interesting information that the man is the image and glory of God. He's getting this, we have said, from Genesis 1 and 2. And then he says something interesting that I was told by two different people. This is interesting. You should mention this. Is the glory, he says, but the woman is the glory of man. He does not say the woman is the image of man. He doesn't say that because woman is the image of God. That's what Genesis 1 clearly teaches. Genesis 1 clearly teaches that man and woman, male and female, are the image of God. We've talked about what that means. It means you're kings or deputy rulers ruling over God's creation as men and women. But the way the creation counts are set up, Genesis 1 teaches that man is the crown of God's creative acts, and Genesis 2 teaches that woman is the crown of man, of the creation of man. Does that make sense? That's a huge point. It is this point that keeps this sounding like good news in your ears. Okay? It's this point that helps all of this sound like good news and sound not insulting. What's the opposite of insulting?
Complimentary.
Yeah, that's. I'll use that in two different ways, and I'll change one little letter in that word and make it mean two different things. Isn't that funny? I love a good pun. You know what I'm talking about, right? If you don't worry about it. It's great. The idea that men have headship over ladies it used to be called patriarchy, but then we were all taught that that was wrong. So they've come up with a new name for it, and the new name for it is complementarianism. Which means that men and women complement each other. They work together, and then there's a complement where you give someone a compliment. And so we've just said that this truth is complementary towards the ladies. It complements them on being complementarians with an E. So I thought that was really funny. The nerdy is kind of a nerd pun there. Okay, but it's this truth that keeps it from sounding like bad news. Okay. Because, I'll say it again, the way Genesis 1 lays it out, men and women are both the image and glory of God, or the image of God, but mankind, both women and men, mankind is the crowning work of God's creation in Genesis 1. But in Genesis 1, it's only the male that's created. And the male being created is the crowning work of God's, of all the other creatures that God made. And everything else he made, because he makes it last. So it's kind of like the finishing touch, the crowning work. That's how it's presented. So you could say it's the glory of God's creation on that or crown. I like crown of God's creation. But then it's not complete. He brings all the animals to man to see what he's going to name them. There's not found a helper suitable for him. And so God takes his rib and fashions it into the woman, and the woman is brought to the man, and he sings a song over her. and the flesh of my flesh and bone of my bone. She'll be called Ishad because she was taken from Ish. And she becomes the crowning work of the creation of man. And I think this is where Paul is getting this. That man is the image and glory of God. Woman is the glory of man. I think my word is crown of creation. I think Paul's word is glory. Do you see that? So ladies, what this means is you look differently, you function differently, and your head looks different because you're the crowning work of the creation of humans, mankind. And as such, kind of like the icing on top or something, so it looks, you know, no one worries when they make a cake, they don't usually decorate the cake itself, they decorate the icing on the cake to make that look beautiful. And the ladies, you're supposed to be, you are more beautiful than men are because you're the crowning work of that creation of man. Who is mankind, though? It's the image of God. Does that see how it all fits together? Yes.
When it says that women should wear their head covering while praying, is that praying out loud?
Praying or prophesying is what he says. He doesn't say out loud or silently. I'm just going to go with the text. If you're praying or prophesying. Yeah, and in the ancient world, kind of the big secret, I don't know if it's a secret, but the big, the reality, the way I was taught, I'll put it this way, is that up until like three or four hundred years ago, when people prayed or read, they always did it out loud. It was just part of the culture. I don't know if that's true or not. The Hebrew word for reading is to call out. And there's accounts of people, even in the Puritan era, when they prayed out loud. We have a tendency to pray silently, and I don't know that they did it as much in the ancient world, but you know that Hannah was, in Marty's text last week, Hannah was praying quietly and her lips were moving, so we know they did pray silently some, so I don't know if that's true, but I've been told that. But the point is, he just says praying or prophesying, so I'm not gonna monkey with the text. If you're praying or prophesying, so is it within the church? You say, my argument for it's in the church, ladies, when you're in your prayer closet, it doesn't matter. My argument for that would be he's writing to the church. Okay, he's writing to the church, and so he's dealing with things that are in the church, in the congregation. My argument against that, my argument for even in your prayer closet, ladies, cover your head, would be he just says praying and prophesying. He doesn't say in the church. And that's what we get into. You're going to have to use a little bit of your own wisdom and reading ability and with the Holy Spirit to figure out how bound your conscience is. Because I can't answer all of the questions because I don't know the answers. And I'm not going to get up here and act like I know the answers when I don't. Yes, that's kind of where I'm building up, I hope. Any other comments on this then? Any other questions I cannot answer? So I hope that you can respect that. I'm going to do the best I can to explain the text, but I don't have the answers. I'm not going to come up with the answers. I'm not going to bind your conscience completely on this. I hope to bind in a few places, but we got to hurry if I'm going to get there. Okay? So the idea here is that mankind, image of God, male is the crowning work of the creation of God, female the crowning work of that. Amy just said, the glory of the glory. So Doug Wilson, a pastor out in Moscow, Idaho, he's on the internet a lot, okay? So, and you love him or hate him, and sometimes a little bit of both, because he's sort of Luther-esque in the fact that he doesn't mind to really ruffle feathers. I just put it that way. And sometimes you'll hate him. I hate him sometimes on some things and love him on some things. And I don't. By the way, parenthetically, do not ever allow yourself to get into the halo effect or the horns effect. Don't ever allow yourself with anyone but Jesus to say, well, this person is right about most things, therefore he's right about everything, and give him a halo or her a halo, because it doesn't work that way. Everyone has blind spots. And don't ever say, well, this person's wrong about a good bit of stuff, so he's wrong about everything, and give him horns. It doesn't work that way, okay? And don't do that with Doug Wilson. But he has this line that he's used that then his daughter, Rebecca Merkel is her name, she wrote a book. What was it called? I'm sorry? Oh, Eve in Exile. So Rebecca Merkel wrote a book called Eve in Exile. And then there is also a documentary about it, which I appreciated the documentary, but his daughter was explaining this sort of concept in that documentary and used the phrase to describe this, the glory of the glory. So mankind is the glory of God's creation. It is Paul's term. And then woman is the glory of man. So it doesn't mean like, what she explains is that does not mean, you know, like man is the glory of God and she's underneath as the glory of man. It's the opposite. He's the crowning work of God's creation, and as such, he's the glory of God, and then she's on top as the glory of man. She's the glory of the glory. Does that make sense? I think that's a good, I wasn't certain when I first saw that documentary and when I first entered into this, I wasn't certain that was right and biblical. I mean, I thought it sounded good. Didn't make the ladies mad, you know, so it's always got good points for saying something in a way that makes the ladies happy, you know, but wasn't sure it was biblical. I am pretty sure it's biblical now, because I think that's exactly what he's saying. I'm using the word crown because that's the word I like. Paul's term is glory. And I think that, so ladies, the glory of the glory. That's where I think that's right. Okay? So that explanation's important. Then there's a little concession nevertheless. Okay, let me say one other thing about this, though. Because of this, there are two things that are held in tension in the creation account. And I have them both on the board. One is headship. And headship is in tension. Let's do it this way. This is going to be a little balancing thing here. It's not exactly straight, but it was intended to be. Headship needs to be in tension and balanced with this part here, the glory of the glory. Because in the glory of the glory thing, the woman finds herself in a place of a superior beauty and superior honor in the creation of the humans. Okay, I'm going to say it again. So the glory of the glory, I think part of what that means is the woman, the female, holds a place of superior beauty and superior honor. Okay? But she holds a subservient role with regard to headship. She's submitting to the husband. The husband's not submitting to her. She is his helper. He's not her helper. If she gets a job in another town, the husband says, no, I'm not going to go there. You can't take that promotion. If he gets a job in another town and he wants to go, she has to go. Just to put it in real practical terms, because of Father of the Bride. Hey, you've been discipled wrong if you watch Father of the Bride, which I think is a great, fun movie. And I'm sure that's going to upset some people, but it's just the facts. So headship is in tension with glory of the glory. And that's our trouble. It's hard for us to hold things in tension. And it's hard for us to, it's hard for us to hold things in balance and split hairs. We tend to think, you know, we tend to think this kind of stuff is a zero-sum game. To where there's only, so in the worldview of Marxism, the goal is power. And I don't know if you realize this or not, but we all have been somewhat influenced by a worldview of Marxism, where we think power is sort of the goal. And so, if my husband has more power, that's a bad thing for me. If I'm a lady, my husband has more power, I have to obey him. He may not do the job right. I don't trust my husband. He's a deadbeat or whatever. And that sounds like bad news to me, because we tend to think of this as being a zero-sum game, and if he wins, I lose kind of a thing. It's not really the way it is. If he wins, I win. If we're doing things biblically, we both win in God's economy. So, not any more about that. That could be a whole another thing on its own, which we're not going to do now. But the point I want you to hear is the glory of the glory, beauty and honor, is held in tension in this text and in your lives with headship and authority. And that is just the way the world works. That's the way God intended the world to work. And this is seen somewhat in his little, I called it a concession or a nevertheless, when he says, it's in verses 11 and 12. Nevertheless, neither is, so he had just said, nor was man created for the woman, but woman for the man. Man is not from woman, but woman from man. Man was not created for the woman, woman was created for the man. Nevertheless, neither is man independent of woman, nor woman independent of man. For as the woman came from man, so even so man comes through the woman. But all things. So God intended for the male-female relationship to be interdependent and needing to be interdependent. We need each other. And we have different roles and different ways of acting out those roles. And the woman is more beautiful, and you open the door for her, she doesn't open the door for you. You protect her, she doesn't protect you. You honor her more than you honor yourself, men. So she's more beautiful and more highly honored. And yet, she doesn't give you orders, you give her orders. And I know that kind of language is going to slap someone in the face and make it feel bad because of the way we've been discipled. But it's just what the text says, all over the place. And remember, I'm just trying to be faithful. I didn't write the Bible. I told one lady once, who's not here, who was jumping down my throat one morning, early in the morning, because I, as the pastor, had said she couldn't. There's at least two or three ladies like this, and maybe I shouldn't say that. Let me say it this way. I, as a pastor, said she couldn't do something that I thought was unbiblical for her to do. I'll put it that way. And she jumped down my throat, along with one other lady, before I'd even drank my coffee. And her beat-up husband was sitting over there quietly. And you know me, Mr. Tactful. And I just said, I didn't write the Bible. I didn't write the Bible. But while I'm pastor, we will follow the Bible. And that's the end of the matter. And the husband goes, yeah, that's right. I don't know. I didn't write it. So then we have, real quickly, second argument, argument two. I feel like I'm wasting too much time doing what we did yesterday or last week, but I feel like if I don't do it, then I can't draw any conclusions. So I'm going to try to get through this in the next 2-3 minutes. Argument two is, in verses, what did I say? Verses, I didn't write down the verses on my page. 13, I'm going to say through 15. Verses 13 to 15 is argument two.
You said 13 to 14, and then the
reason was 15. Oh, I was probably right last week, so let's go with that. 14. And then the 15 was the reason. Okay, thank you for that, Casey. Yes, I have that. I can see that now. Because it starts with the word because. Because. Verse 15. So, judge among yourselves. Is it appropriate for a woman, this is argument two, is it appropriate for a woman to pray to God uncovered? Does not nature itself. So the argument two has to do with the nature of male and femaleness, nature itself. And I, Joe Dixon helped us with this. It was the, did I say hyena? It was the hyena that the ancient naturalists, they didn't call it science back then. The ancient scientists 2,000 years ago believed that the hyena changed its sex. It was transgendered. It wasn't that way. The female looks a lot like the male when you look down there. But only one of them can have babies. One of them's male, one of them's female. But this word that's used, that's translated nature in your Bible, was the word that they used when they were describing the nature of this beast changing its sexuality. So nature itself, this word included the idea of male-femaleness. And so Paul is saying, when you look at the male and femaleness of the world, it ought to be obvious to you that there's a difference in that man should have short hair and woman should have long hair. That's what he's saying. I'll read it to you because everyone got up in arms last week about that. And I wanted to read it again. Verse 13, judge among yourselves, is it proper for a woman to pray to God with her head uncovered? Does not even nature itself teach you that if a man has long hair, it is a dishonor to him, but if a woman has long hair, it is her glory, for her hair is given to her as a covering. So, and I wanted to specify one thing. I think I used the word sin last week, and I thought maybe I shouldn't use that word, because when I'm thinking about it, here's the way I think about this. There's nothing there's nothing inherently sinful about a man having long hair or a woman having short hair. There's nothing like inherently sinful about that. Paul, it was great that Marty's text, when he got and preached that Sunday, did you catch what Hannah said? He's devoting, Hannah was promising her son Samuel to the Lord. And part of the promise that she makes to the Lord is that a razor will never touch his head. Did you catch that when Marty read that? And so this is much like Samson. He's going to be a Nazarite from his birth till his death. And as a sign of him being under the authority of God in a special way, he's going to be a Nazarite. He's not going to eat any grapes, not going to drink any strong drink or wine, and he's never going to cut his hair. And so there's a connection, I think, there somewhere with authority and a devotion to. But under normal, the only way that something like that makes sense. So if Samuel looks different than everyone else, or if Samson looks different than everyone else, the exception proves the rule. Does that make sense? If all men have long hair, or if there's nothing normal about men having short hair, then when you see Samson running around with long hair, it doesn't mean anything. Does that make sense? Yeah.
I'm skipping it, but I'm going to have to leave.
Yeah.
Covering in verse 15, parable lay on, are you going to go over that?
In verse 15, I was not going to deal specifically with the word. Do you want me to? I don't know. Maybe I should have looked that up more, and I'll look it up right now. Okay, so what she's asking about, hey, tell him real quick what you're asking about, because I can't do two things at once real loud.
In 15, he uses parable lay on the covering, and in the rest of the verse, it's catechephalus.
Yeah. Well, catechephalus means coming down from the head. That he uses that one other time. And then I think there's then another word that he uses. Periboleon. Well, this is, I'll read it to you. I'll read the entry, if I can find the entry. I always have to sing the alphabet to myself. And sometimes I get lazy and sing the English alphabet to myself, which actually helps you, believe it or not, because English is from Latin, and Latin's a close cousin to Greek, but, okay. There's not a very big entry, and a lexicon just gives you what they think the meaning is, having studied the literature where this word occurs. So parableon, it's a neuter noun. Covering, this is what it gives us in English. Covering, wrap, cloak, robe of an article of clothing. And then it gives you a bunch of places in the Greek literature, not just the New Testament, where this word shows up. And then it says, something like a cloak or mantle, hose peribelon eleison, or which is roll up as a cloak from Hebrews 1:12, which is also Psalm 101:27. He come ante peribelon didote avte, the woman's hair is giving to her as a covering, 1 Corinthians 11:15. And see on katakalupto. I don't know what that means. So it looks like it occurs twice in the New Testament, and it occurs in other places in the other Greek literature, which is where they're getting their idea. And they think it means a covering or a wrap or a cloak, a robe, an article of clothing. So I did look at that in my study. I did not think it was significant. So a lot of times what we think of as English speakers, we tend to think that Certain words are going to have a really unique meaning. It's Greek word. It means words are in Greek are like words in English. They kind of just have all these different meanings based on how you use them. I think it's just another meaning for covering. So the question is it giving to? Is it enough for her to have their hair as a covering or not? I've got to move on, but let me get to the point here, because I think this helps us. I think that verse 16 is your just conclusion about everyone else is doing it. Everyone else is doing it. Everyone else is doing it, which links up with verse 2 about the traditions. Okay. So I think the real meat, Ashley, and you had an excellent question, and I'm not insulting your intelligence by answering it this way. But the real meat of this isn't in particular words that's being used, but the way he's structuring his argument. And the way he's structuring his argument is by saying, if you agree that nature itself teaches you this, if you agree that it would be crazy for a woman to shave her head, then you ought to take that same logic and just follow it out, which is, why? Well, it's because of the way God created the world. The reason it seems odd to use, because God put something inside of us. And what he put inside of us is a kind of an inward kind of knowledge. I'm expanding on, but I think this is what he means. Kind of a knowledge of who we are as created beings. And in the creation, men have headship, and there needs to be a sign of authority on the woman's head because she's not the head, but also she's the glory of the glory. So she ought to also have something on her head that's more glorious. And all of that shows you that nature itself teaches you this. This is argument 2, that if a man has long hair, it's a dishonor to him. If a woman has long hair, it's a glory to her. So the thing is, if he's using this reality, in the reality of verse 3 and the glory of the glory, to point to the argument 2 here, nature itself teaches you this. But he's saying, if nature itself teaches you this, use that logic and carry it on out. And the logic leads you to that same principle also being true when she prays or prophesies, and when you pray or prophesy. So when a man prays or prophesies, his head's uncovered because of the same principle. And when she prays or prophesies, her head is covered because of that principle. Okay, the question is, here's the question. Is the hair enough for a covering? Does verse is 15 enough? Her hair is given to her as a covering. Is that saying that this hair being the covering is the principle that is universal, and the cultural application is the head covering? Okay, does that make sense? The cultural application is the head covering, but the universal principle is the long hair. Their hair is given to her for a covering, and that shows you then. This is one argument. Shows you then that the long hair is enough. That's the principle. The cultural thing is the head covering. That's what I believe for the last 20 years. The problem with that is that that's not how he uses the argument here. He uses this to support this, and he also uses the headship and the glory thing to support that. So he's supporting his main argument from two different directions. And they both lead to this. His point is, if those things are true, then this also is true. Now, here's why it sort of matters. So the egalitarians, that's the opposite of the complementarians, as we were talking about earlier. Egalitarians are the woman, Beth Moore, who thinks that women ought to be able to stand up in the pulpit and preach, okay? So people like, I don't know if she's made this argument, but people like that, okay? The egalitarians will look at us and say, well, you don't want women to be in the pulpit, but you're being inconsistent. Do you also wear head coverings? Because the classic text for why women shouldn't be elders and shouldn't be in the pulpit is 1 Timothy 2. And you guys keep telling us that Paul, because Paul grounds his argument in creation, in the created order, so our argument for women aren't elders, women don't preach, is that in 1 Timothy 2, Paul's reason, his grounding of his argument, is in creation. Therefore, it's universal. For Adam was formed first, then Eve. And Adam was not deceived, but Eve was deceived and became a transgressor. So he grounds it in the created order and in human sin, but he goes back to... And so our argument is, since he grounds it in the created order, it's universal. And they know that argument, and they're looking at us and say, well, if you believe that way, then why aren't you wearing head coverings? Because in 1 Corinthians 11, he grounds head coverings in created order as well. Does that make sense? And it's true. So I always responded by saying, yeah, but verse 15 says, and this is the argument of anyone who says hair is the covering, I think, verse 15 says the hair is given to her as a covering. But when you look at the structure of the argument, that is used not as a separate thing, but really as support for the reductio up here. Okay? Not going to get time to it, Amy. I hope it wasn't too much hard for you. Okay, so here's one other thing. Holly, I apologize if I've just gone over all this. I feel like I've spent so much time doing the same thing we did last week that I've not had time to do the new stuff. But I felt like we needed to amplify that so you understand. Okay, real quickly, what about this stuff on the angels? Where is that? Verse 10, yes. Verse 10, for this reason, woman ought to have a symbol of authority on her head because of the angels. I think this phrase looks back before it and after it and says, because of what's before it, she should have authority on her head, and because of the angels. So when we're asking ourselves, is this head covering thing only cultural? Only people in the first century or before knew what was going on here. It doesn't mean anything to us. So it's not important for us to do. It doesn't mean anything to us. So it's irrelevant. That's the argument. What's it mean because of the angels? And I don't have time to kind of coax it out of everyone. Does anyone want to just jump in? What do you think? Because of the angels. Isn't that funny? But a woman, for this reason, a woman ought to have a symbol of authority on her head. She ought to have a head covering because of the angels. The angel could mean messenger, probably not here. What's it make you think of? Anything?
Demon babies.
Yeah, demons and babies, right? We were taught this all. It's just Greek mythology, man. It's just fake. And then I looked in the Bible, and it was there, you know. So Genesis 6, right? Real quickly. So the ancient tradition, the traditional understanding of Genesis 6, is that angels, or demons, if you will, were actually demons are something different. Demons in the ancient Jewish tradition, demons. Never mind. I better not even say that. It gets confusing. Now it came to pass when men began to, this is 6:1. It came to pass when men began to multiply on the face of the earth and daughters were born to them, that the sons of God, that's angels, it's a phrase used for angels all over the place, so it probably means angels, the sons of God saw that the daughters of men were beautiful. They were the glory of the glory. And they, the sons of God, the angels, took wives for themselves of all whom they chose. And the Lord said, my spirit shall not strive with man forever, for he is indeed flesh, yet his days shall be 120 years. There were giants on the earth in those days, and also afterward. After what? After the flood. When there were giants on the earth in those days, and also afterward, when the sons of God came in to the daughters of men, and they bore children to them. Those were the mighty men who were of old, men of renown. So in the ancient Enoch tradition, you have this idea that this passage means that angels are copulating with human females and having offspring that are half gods. Elohim is used all the time in the Old Testament, the word gods, used for these beings. So angels is our New Testament term. Elohim or gods is the Old Testament term. So the gods were not the one true and living God, but the divine beings, the angels. They were copulating with females, human females, and having offspring that are half God and half human. And they were the giants. And it was happening before the flood. It's part of the reason the flood happened. But the text says it was happening also afterward. Or at least that's the traditional interpretation. There are other interpretations of that text, but I'm giving you the one that's the traditional one. And it seems to be the one that Jude and Peter take when they write what they write, 2 Peter and Jude. And Greco and Roman mythology also says the same thing, that the gods were having children with women and they were half gods. I think that's what Paul's referring to, and I think he's telling you, ladies, you need to have a sign of authority on your head because of the angels. Because they think you're hot and they want to know if you're taken. I think that's what he's actually saying. It sounds odd to a bunch of secularists. I get it. God didn't create a secular world. And spiritual warfare is real. And by the way, just so I don't leave you hanging, the ancient tradition. Also, this is extra-biblical Jewish tradition, like Enoch. But it may not be right. But I think this is what the text is saying. But the ancient kind of Jewish tradition is that where the demons of the New Testament that are always trying to enter people and possess people, were the departed souls of the half-breed creatures. Because they're half human and half angelic, and there's no place for them to go. So they're always looking to jack with people and inhabit people. That's the Jewish tradition. It's crazy, isn't it? And because of this reality, that's just another reason, ladies, for you to make sure that everyone can see that you are a chaste and a taken woman under the protection of a man somewhere, as a daughter or as a woman. I think that's what he's saying. If that's what he's saying, and I think it is, that's what I think, if that's what he's saying, that means that the head coverings is not just for the first century. Because that reality is just a universal kind of reality. So if that's what he's saying, it's another argument for the head coverings being the universal principle. I'm sorry? Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Because the argument here would be the hair is enough of a covering, and the way Paul uses that phrase, and also because of the angels, would mean that the head coverings are not just cultural. Because he's going back 3,000 years plus from his own time into a different culture and pulling a reason from that, which means it's not cultural to him and it's not cultural to us. Because he's going back over 3,000 years to a totally different culture and talking about a reality that's beyond flesh and blood, the angels. And he's saying it's still a reality now. If you doubt this is kind of, if you think this is way too crazy, click on Netflix and see if you can find any like movies about creatures, demonic creatures, having kids with humans. Rosemary's Baby was the one that was in the 70s, right? It's just interesting. I've got two. I don't know who was right. Who's first?
Yeah. If this is about the angels not knowing that we're under submission, why would it be only when we're praying and prophesying?
Yeah, that's a good question. And that may be an argument for that. Okay, so she says if it's about the angels, why would it only be when we're praying and prophesying? And that's a great question. It might be an argument against my interpretation. So I'm going to have to wrap up in 2 minutes. What was your question? I don't know the answer to that, and it's a good question.
If we were supposed to wear a physical head covering while praying and prophesying, what if our husbands are praying and we're with them, mm-hmm. and we're not the ones speaking to the Lord?
Yeah, I don't know that. I see what you're asking. I have no idea. I'm going to, right now in the last 2 minutes, try to tell you things that I think I know and things that I don't know. Would that be helpful? So I think that we can bind everyone's conscience with verses 13 and 14. Well, let me rephrase this. Let me say it this way. I think under normal conditions, verses 13 and 14 give us a principle that we ought to respect. Verses 13 to 14, judge among yourselves. Well, just verse 14. Does not even nature itself teach you that if a man has long hair, it's a dishonor to him, but if a woman has long hair, it is a glory to her, for her hair is given to her as a covering. So unless you're going to take the Nazarite vow, men, or, you know, there's some reason why all my hair has fallen out or something like that. I think it is, especially in our day of confused gender roles, it's very, very smart just to say that binds my that there's a principle here that's generally true. It's like a proverb. It's generally true. There might be little exceptions here and there, but it's generally true that I need to obey these standards that nature itself teaches us, that's grounded in creation, that if I'm a man, I'm going to keep it shorter, and he doesn't give us lengths. I'm going to keep it shorter. If I'm a woman, I'm going to keep it a little longer. I'm going to have a masculine haircut. I'm going to have a feminine haircut. And I'm sure there's lots of variability in that. You know, I'm not going to sit here and try to put links on it. I have no idea. Okay? But I think that you need to think through that, like making sure you look male or female. And I think that the principle could also cover, like in our society, how we dress and how we act. We should carry ourselves as men or as women and not be confused on it. Transgenderism is just clear sin against the created order, and it's just going whole hog. It's like you're getting to see the reductio brought to its conclusions, to its absurd conclusions right now. I will say this in support of that before I let you go, and then we can kind of pick up the pieces next week and just be absolutely done. But I told you, like, why is it, if you doubt this, if you think I'm absolutely crazy, why is it that lesbians tend to shave their heads or part of their head? You just ask yourself, did they get it? Are they honestly just going to 1 Corinthians 11 and trying to rebel against it? Is that what they're trying to do? Or does something in nature itself teach them that if they're wanting to rebel against the standard, this would be a good way to do it? I'll show it with my hair. Why is it that you're... transgender boys try to grow out their hair? Because they're trying to rebel against something that they know in their heart. Okay? It's probably not because they're picking on 1 Corinthians 11. I want to say more.
Don't erase that.
I won't erase that. And I want you to think this, your homework this week, think about other applications besides just your cloth on your head, and there may be lots more important things to be ways of thinking of applying this than trying to figure out there's probably more important applications of this than just trying to figure out if we're going to wear a handkerchief on our head on Sunday. There's probably a lot more application. Now that may be a good application, but there's probably a lot of other things we need to be talking about besides just that. And think about those next week and come back with comments. Oh! And pray for me.